Welcome to Beyond Standards, your source for authentic discussions about the world of teaching. Get ready to explore challenges, share inspiring stories, and discover strategies that will empower you to make a lasting impact on your students. Here are your hosts, who are trying to master the fine art of maintaining their sanity while managing a classroom, Joe Rohrhoff and Jeff Bologna.
Greetings, everyone, and a warm welcome to episode 14 of the Beyond Standards podcast, where we talk about the reality of teaching. I'm Joe, and as always, I'm here with my co-host and my partner in all of my teaching adventures, Jeff. Jeff, how is your day going?
Oh, man, Joe. You know, I was reflecting on last week's episode, and one of the things I talked about was this wacky time of year that we're in, right? We come back from our holiday break, and then we had Martin Luther King Day off, and then at the time of recording this, Joe, we're on back-to-back cold days, so it's this wacky time of year where we plan. I have a quiz scheduled, and I've got this scheduled, and then it's like, oh, cold day. So here we are now. I spent this morning erasing my plan book, adjusting the dates on my Schoology page, getting ready for hopefully we return to school tomorrow. But if the weather doesn't change, who knows when we'll be back in the building.
You're not hoping for another cold day? Because my morning consisted of sleeping in and hanging out. Good for you for getting into the grade book and looking at your calendar. That's impressive.
Well, I have a student intern from the University of Michigan starting one of these days. So I have to kind of plan to make sure we're all set for that. But hear me out. I'm not complaining. Not complaining at all. I love the slow mornings, the extra cup of coffee, sitting on the couch, things like that.
Yeah, no, I know how you ELA teachers are.
Yeah. Social studies teachers, were you even planning to come to school?
Oh, yeah. We enjoy our days off. I'll just leave it at that. All right. we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, let's push into the topic today. Let's jump right into it because it's one I'm really excited about. It's a topic that a more serious topic. We're going to be talking about the mental health of students and what teachers can do to kind of foster an environment to improve, I guess, the mental well-being of students. So our mission today is hopefully you teachers will walk away with some strategies and some things that you can do to help promote mental health in your classrooms. And I'm super excited for our guest today. Jeff, I know you're planning on introducing the guest. You want to give a quick intro?
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe. You know, for today's episode dealing with mental health, when, you know, we were planning this, there was really only, you know, one person that came to mind that I thought would be perfect for this. She's, you know, the social worker at our school. If I'm giving the wrong title, I'm sure she will correct me. But really have gotten to know our guest, Jill, more the last 3 years working with her. You know, coming out of the COVID pandemic and things like that, student mental health has been kind of on the forefront and been, you know, something super important in the classroom. And so I've really gotten to know and work with Jill. So I would like to welcome Jill Anderson to the podcast this morning. Thank you, Jill, for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Joe and Jeff. It's great to be here.
So excited to have you.
Can you start by just kind of giving our listeners a little bit of your background, you know, your journey as a social worker and what inspired you kind of to take this career path that you have?
Sure. So I think this is my 15th year as a school social worker. And, you know, as cliche as it sounds, I always enjoyed working with others and helping others. So, what brought me specifically to school social work is I was fortunate enough to have a lot of great school experiences and people that kind of helped shape who I was and kind of guide me. But I know many others don't have that. So, you know, I do school social work because I want to make school as enjoyable and enriching, just like teachers do for students. But, you know, knowing that there's so many mental health barriers and other barriers for students that might impact them. So kind of just being their advocate and, you know, helping them communicate more effectively with teachers and parents. So, because we all know if students can't perform if they aren't emotionally well. So I think we need to try to tackle those areas first so that they can be their best selves and perform the best they can in the classroom.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, mental health is something that is, I mentioned this in the intro, it's becoming more and more common in the schools to be something that's talked about as opposed to when I was younger. I feel like it was almost a taboo topic to even talk about it. And I think it's a an important time. It's a time where finally it's getting some attention, the attention that it deserves. And it's so great to have people like you that are out there doing that. But before we dive deeper, I just want to build on that first question a little bit. Could you walk us through a typical day in your role as a social worker?
Sure. Well, I kind of laugh when you say typical day, because every day is truly different. Like yeah. I imagine it is in the classroom too. You know, you come in with your plan, your calendar, and I'm a planner, and I've had to get really accustomed to just kind of changing things up and just doing what is needed in the moment. But, you know, my primary role is special education. So I work with students who have IEPs with social, emotional, behavioral needs. So I have a caseload of students that I work on with specific goals. And I also do special ed evaluations. However, in collaboration with our school counselors, I will also support any student who comes down to the counseling office with an IEP or without an IEP. But that can look, you know, different every day. So some, you know, my average day might be maybe a parent meeting, meeting with individual students, crisis intervention, and also running student support groups. But like I said, it's every day is an adventure, and depending on the needs of the students in the building, it can change. So.
Yeah, I've seen you firsthand, Jill, getting pulled in, you know, five different directions all at once, from our admin, teachers, counselors, things like that. So I can honestly say that I've seen that, where it's like, oh, she's not in her office today, but she told me to come check in with her and she's not there. Building off that, Jill, can you share, you know, a specific instance when, you know, you felt like you've made that big difference in a student's life?
Yeah. You know, this dates back to, gosh, one of my first years as a school social worker. And I worked with a student in high school who had a traumatic brain injury and autism. And he was a phenomenal basketball player and he loved the Los Angeles Lakers. And I encouraged him. I think he was a senior, and I encouraged him to go out for the basketball team. And this was something he and other people didn't think was like he could ever do. And he did go out, and unfortunately he didn't make the team, but actually fortunately he was able to be, I pushed him then and talked to the coach about being the team manager. So seeing him grow, and his, you know, he was the happiest I've ever seen him. He took his role and responsibility very seriously. And it just made me realize the power of finding individual strengths and helping them feel empowered and do something that they love, and they can feel needed and included and wanted and supporting others. I think that probably was just the happiest and the most impactful thing I've done, is just encouraging this particular student to just go for what he wanted and, you know, be a part of a team and take a risk. And he didn't make the team, but he, you know, he inspired all the other members of the team and our school community. And, to this day, you know, I look back and that was just one of my, you know, greatest, relationships. And, I'm really proud of that. So
such a cool story.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah. The stories of, you know, inclusion and creating a scenario where everybody benefits, the student benefits, the basketball team benefits, the basketball program benefits. It is just, stories like that are really cool.
Just going to say kudos to the players and the coach on that team too, for welcoming that student onto the bench. And, you know, I'm sure he took his role seriously as a team manager, and I'm sure the coach benefited from that. I'm sure the players benefited from that. So kudos to that coach and those teammates as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Yep.
We're going to dive in a little bit, because our audience is made up of a lot of teachers. And I know there's a lot of teachers that want to kind of improve the atmosphere in their classroom. And Jill, being someone that kind of sees the school from a big picture, you don't just see one classroom, you get to see your students and all the students in all the different environments. And I'm sure you've got a lot of good tips, a lot of good things that our teachers can use to help them through this. So let's focus on the classroom now. In your experience, what does an emotionally healthy classroom look like? And what can a teacher do to kind of create that classroom?
Sure. I think first and foremost, you know, when I've seen really healthy, emotionally classrooms, it's the teachers that are also taking care of their own kind of emotional health, because, you know, we need to be calm when our students can't. And that's not to say that we can't show our feelings. And in fact, I encourage teachers to show their feelings, but modeling those healthy coping strategies that they can use, I think is really important. So kids understand and learn that it's okay to have feelings, and these are, I can share them, but these are kind of appropriate ways to share them. So I think first and foremost, taking care of yourselves as teachers is the number one priority. You know, they say if you're on an airplane, put your mask on first before somebody else's, you know, to be able to help other students emotionally, we have to be in emotionally good places too. So I think that's really important. I think also, like, assume every student has a story. And what I mean by that is assume there could be, you know, trauma. There could be a mental health diagnosis. There could be a lacking skill that they don't have. And understand that it's coming, you know, that it's coming maybe from somewhere where they can't control. And then, of course, it's like, well, then what do I do with that, right? So I think first and foremost within the classroom, some strategies is kids we know with trauma and mental health, they really need you know, consistent and predictable environments. So as much as you can, I know, again, it's things have to change at times, but I think the most we can have a predictable environment can really help our students. With our anxious students specifically, I also, the kind of blind calling on students to participate can be very anxiety provoking. So we don't also want to, and you know, just give them a free ride out because they need to work on that skill. So I think scaffolding is really important for students. So say, you know, they've got a presentation, you know, you can always work with that student individually and don't let them not present, but maybe this first presentation, they're going to do it just with you and a couple other students, or maybe they're going to record it and send it to you. And with the ultimate goal of presenting in the classroom, but definitely that scaffolding piece, I think, is really important. I think also, too, I mentioned blindly calling on students. If able, you know, give that student a heads up, like, hey, I really want to, you know, you to participate today. And I've got this question. I think you do a really good job of answering. Can I, you know, here it is, and give them that heads up. Also giving them questions that might be low risk, like, what did you do over the weekend? You know, something that for them might be lower risk than, you know, an academic question. So I think just having, like I said, those predictable environments. Also, group projects can be very tough for some of our students with mental health diagnoses, you know, finding a partner, working with a partner. So, you know, if you can proactively try to pair them with other students that you think might be a good fit, or they do feel comfortable with, and doing that ahead of time and setting, helping them, you know, identify roles. I've noticed with a lot of my students that can be very helpful as well. So, and I think you guys have touched on this a lot over your podcast, just that power of building those relationships, because then you know when something's off. And I think as teachers too, it's okay to ask students, you know, are you okay? Or I've noticed, you know, you're putting your head down a lot, or you just, something seems different, and that's okay to ask. But then of course, knowing what to do when you do get information that might be out of your comfort zone, you know, and knowing who those resources and those people are in the school that can kind of take it one step further then.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Assume every student has a story. It's, you know, something that we can kind of look into as teachers and try to look at them as an individual, not as just another student. That's such good advice. And I also love how you said, hey, we're not letting these kids off the hook. We're not saying you don't have to present or you don't ever have to speak in front of a class. You're giving them strategies to kind of get them there, which I think is incredible, because if a student feels uncomfortable in their class, it's going to be so difficult as a teacher to get anything out of them at all. So I like that scaffolding and building it up.
Listening to you talk there, Jill, some of this information would have been good for me, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, dealing with some of my EI students. Because, you know, you mentioned how, you know, taking care of ourselves and our emotional well-being. And I know there's been students I've had in the past that you've worked with that have some emotional impairments, and I get emotional too. And I need to remember, I need to stay calm and not, you know, jump into the argument that the person is trying to engage me in. So all really good information. Thank you.
And it's hard. I'm not going to, you know, it's hard to stay calm. And I'm not, you know, I think it's, you can share that you're frustrated, this is frustrating me, and I need to step away, or I need to come back to this. We need to come back to this when we're both calm. Like, those are okay things to say, because that's teaching them, you know, appropriate ways to handle, you know, our frustration. And frustration and anger and stuff are okay, but it's just, you know, having those when both people are elevated, it's good to hold off and come back to it when both people are in a good place and calm. So
That's great. What about challenges that teachers might be facing when they're addressing the emotional well-being? You know, how can teachers, you know, navigate those challenges?
Absolutely. Well, and I'll be the first to say, like, teaching, social work is hard. You know, we deal with a lot of difficult situations, but when I come into a classroom and I see the dynamics of the students and all the individual needs and how you're expected to teach and make these kids move forward academically, I don't know how you do it. So that's the part that I think is the hardest for teachers, is the pressure I'm assuming you guys feel to meet those academic demands and get those kids from step A to B, and you're evaluated on how well your students do. And so that part I think is really hard, is finding that balance as teachers of trying to get them to meet those academic demands, but also you've got a lot of challenges with some of the students to get them there. So that's definitely what I see for you guys is just finding that balance of, but we know, like, we got to tackle some of those emotional things first or else students can't learn, right?
100%. Yeah.
If a student is not feeling comfortable, then, you know, learning whatever we're talking about in history that day is the last thing on that student's mind. So yeah, you do have to make sure they feel comfortable. So Jill, what's some advice you'd give to teachers in working together with their school social worker?
Sure. And I never pretend to know the students better than the teacher. And so I think definitely your input is so important and so crucial. And so when we do ask for that input and that time, and of course, time is always the toughest thing for teachers, is finding that time to collaborate, right? But trying to find that time to reach out to the school social worker or counselor or school psychologist, to share your input as to what you're seeing. And then also, you know, taking those accommodations or those recommendations from the school social worker or special ed teacher or psychologist and putting those into the classroom. Same kind of goes for like those behavior support plans. You know, we kind of create those assuming we kind of know what's going on in the classroom, but we don't always know. So we appreciate that feedback and saying, I don't think this is going to work, or have we tried this? So I think just trying to find that time and that open communication with the social worker, because you guys do know the students best. I also think it can be very helpful to reach out and ask questions about mental health if you're not familiar. I know we have seen definitely an increase in more professional development with mental health, but I think coming from teachers, because do you guys, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, do you guys get any type of, with your teaching programs, do you get any type of mental health training or how to support students behaviorally, social, emotionally in school?
I don't remember going through any of that. It's been a long time for me, and I'm hoping that teachers get more of that today with it being such an important topic. But as far as I know, no.
You know, and Jill, we had a new teacher on last episode, or two episodes ago, sorry, before Christmas. And I don't think he didn't mention anything like that, you know, but it is something that I think the universities probably should start to consider and, you know, implementing.
Yeah. And I know, like, there's a lot of districts, you know, that are putting that at the forefront of professional development. So I'm hoping, yeah, like you said, that's you know, a trend, but advocating for that more, if that is a concern as teachers and, you know, you've got students in your classroom that you're not sure how to support or what to do, you know, go to your building principals and advocate for that of getting more information on how to support those students.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, let's talk about some things that like teachers can do in the classroom. Now, you kind of already covered it before about some practical strategies, you know, the things like not cold calling. You know, me personally, I like to give a kid a heads up, like, hey, I'm going to call on you to answer number 5, or I'll look on their sheet and I'll circle the one and say, this is the one I'm going to have you answer, or things like that. You know, I also meet with students at the beginning of every school year for 5 to 10 minutes, each kid gets some time. And I have kids tell me, you know, if you're anxious about answering questions, let me know so I don't call on you and things like that. You know, and I liked what Joe brought up and you brought up about every student has a story. So all that's, you know, such good stuff for these teachers to take away. But are there any specific classroom activities, you know, that teachers can integrate to promote, you know, mental health among their students, or any lessons and activities that they can do?
Yeah, there are a lot of, we call them SEL, social emotional learning curriculums out there. I know within our district, we have a couple, like we use Second Step and Be Nice. That, you know, I know there definitely is some benefits to those and some good things with them. But I also know, you know, some people have some hesitancy with some of the lessons. So, you know, those are some resources obviously available. But I think just the day-to-day stuff that teachers can kind of do is, you know, we want these young people to become, you know, independent, healthy problem solvers, communicators. So integrating some of those, you know, empathy, how to effectively communicate with others into lesson planning. I've seen a lot of teachers, especially within ELA, do that when, you know, you're discussing characters and also, you know, just if you say you're working on a group project, you know, to have take time to talk to the students about, okay, how do we, what happens if, you know, we disagree with somebody in our group? How can we effectively communicate with that person? What if somebody is left out, you know, when we're getting partners? What should we do? You know, having just those conversations daily and integrating it just within your lessons, I think can be the most impactful because it's every day. I also have seen a lot of teachers, you know, I know our district has done a lot recently with restorative practices and just giving teach or students the voice and ability to kind of, you know, circle up and talk about things. Like if you are having some struggles in the classroom, if, you know, have students talk to each other about that and open up and have that dialogue. So, you know, there are definitely curriculums, but I think a lot of just those practical day-to-day things that as teachers and just how to fail, you know, how to, you know, not get a good grade and how we can handle that. And having those conversations just in the day-to-day teaching, I think can be really, really powerful and impactful. And because there's not a lot of time to add all those other curriculums and things. So as much as you can just add, sprinkle things in here or there, I think can be very helpful.
I mean, you brought up earlier leading by example, and that is something that I think teachers can do. If you know, it doesn't have to be a specific lesson, but if you can share your thoughts and feelings as a teacher, you know, maybe you've got some things going on in your life that if you're comfortable sharing them with your students, and that's a way that students can build that empathy for you. And they kind of learn how to react to that is just, you know, a teacher being a human being and not just a robot that teaches curriculum.
Joe, you took exactly what, absolutely, you took exactly what I was going to say, being genuine, being authentic and being honest with the students. You know, I have found, you know, some of these SEL units, you know, deal with bullying or dealing with this and that, and just relating it to my experiences when I was a middle school student or you know, and being authentic with my students and open and honest and letting them know that I care goes a long, long way to building the trust and building, you know, the comfort in a classroom.
Yeah. And I know you may have already answered this, or you've already shared some examples, but do you have any other examples of how teachers have successfully integrated SEL, emotional wellness practices, into their classroom with some positive outcomes?
Yeah. You know, like I mentioned, you know, I've seen a lot of students or teachers use the second step lessons. And I think, again, they've, you know, the lessons, they might tweak it a little bit to incorporate kind of more of their examples and their experiences. And I think to always, you know, kind of with those lessons is to kind of end it as like, okay, if we're done with this lesson, if there's more questions or concerns you have, here are the people in the building to go and talk to. I think that's a big piece too, is within these lessons, then knowing like where your comfort level is as a teacher. And then when things get a little like beyond where your comfort level might be, knowing where then to direct those conversations and those students to. You know, I think also just within, you know, I know our school does PBIS too, and just building those cultures and that community, and like I said, those expectations, those predictive environments, just it's some things you can do just day to day that's really going to help our young people.
Absolutely.
Jill, considering the unique role that you are in as a school social worker, you know, that Joe and I are in as teachers, what changes or, you know, improvements do you hope to see in the future regarding, you know, mental health and emotional wellness and emotional well-being in the classroom?
So I would love to see us, you know, and this is a big, like, I don't know who or how or when or what, how this will happen, but just lessening the academic pressure of our young people. You know, I think there's academic, there's social, there's cultural, there's extracurricular pressures that our young people face. And I think it's going to take a community. It's going to take, you know, parents, teachers, administrators, them, you know, and I also see students putting so much pressure on themselves. And, you know, being in a middle school, I have, you know, we've seen it. We have students who, you know, they get an A minus on something and it's life altering. And they just feel like they have to be involved in everything and they've got to go to the best college. And, You know, it wasn't that way when I was in school. And I remember school as a very relaxed and positive and happy and fun place. And that's not to say our young people don't have that now, but I think there's just this huge pressure that's put on them right now. And of course, we haven't even touched on the social media piece as well. So I don't know how this can be done, but I'm just hoping that we start seeing that how much pressure these young people are putting on themselves and how much it's a detriment to their health and their well-being, and that we need to, you know, come together and do something about it.
Yeah, we as a society, we put so much emphasis on grades and how people perform in school. And so many people have talents that are outside of math and science and English and social studies and the other classes. Like, their talents lie elsewhere. And yet we put so much emphasis on these things. Like, if they don't do well in this math class, then, you know, they're not going to get into this college and they're not going to have this career. I think that's like a societal thing. It's a parent thing to make kids feel comfortable with what they're good at.
Yeah. And learning to fail, failing is not a bad thing. And, building that resiliency. But I think that's been, you know, we've kind of kids learn, you know, from our early age, like, you know, you can't fail, and, you know, everybody participates and everybody gets the same equal, you know, and which is good. But I also think it's a struggle our students have seen, is just that they don't know how to fail.
So true.
In my role, Jill, I have to recommend students for, you know, honors English as they move towards the high school. And I had a student, gosh, this was about a month ago, early December, asked me, Mr. Bologna, how do I get into honors English next year? And I was like, why are you worried about that in the first week of December? Well, my parents, you know, want to make sure that I get into all the honors classes next year. And to me, I was like, how about we, you know, enjoy the cold weather and the snow, and we worry about the holidays, and we'll figure that out come February. But, you know, it starts at a, you know, earlier and earlier. I mean, I'm teaching sixth grade this year, and the kids are already talking to me about, you know, math classes and when they're in eighth grade and this and that. So it is, yeah, I liked how you said lessening those expectations. I don't know how we get there as a society, but we do need to, you know, kind of get back to the way it was. I know I'm sounding old, when you and I and Jill, when we were in middle school and high school, I mean, there were all kinds of different options. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, you have to go to the University of Michigan or you have to go to an Ivy League school. I agree. I think all of those, and social media on top of it, just compounds these mental health and the emotional well-being of these students.
All right, Jill, are there any resources out there or organizations that teachers can explore to help them out in the classroom?
There definitely are. You know, I think it's just, again, it's that time for teachers. You know, you're so busy and you have so much on your plate that I think the best time is just within our, you know, your district's professional development and your opportunities within your district. Like I mentioned, I know a lot of districts are seeing the value and the benefit of mental health professional development for teachers. So I think continuing to take advantage of those. There's also a lot of, and the communities are doing a lot of mental health awareness and events. And, you know, I know in our district, we do one as well in, I think it's in February or March, like a mental health fair. So I think there's a lot at people's disposal, and not always having the time. I think if a lot can be embedded within, you know, the day or, you know, your professional development, your extended days, those types of things, I think can be helpful. There's also, you know, I use, you know, for our students a lot, like our youth network. So, you know, definitely collaborating and working with them. They put on a lot of events and trainings and also are just a great resource for our students to connect with. So that would be kind of some good places to start, knowing that there's not always a ton of time for teachers to take extra classes and go to extra trainings and seminars or read extra books. If as much can be embedded within, you know, your already kind of work days and times, and or even take advantage of some of those types of, you know, trainings over the summer. And chances are your school mental health teams, you know, are aware of those and have, you know, those resources. So I encourage you to, you know, to reach out to those people to get those.
You know, we like to offer advice, you know, teachers out there that are listening. So based on your experiences, you know, as a school social worker, what's something, you know, new teachers or experienced teachers can take away from this episode that can help them balance these academic demands as well as the emotional well-being of their students?
So, I mean, I think I've said this multiple times, but just anxious and depressed kids can't learn, right? knowing kind of those warning signs or knowing those things when mental health crises might be developing, so you can get that student the support like immediately is really important. So then you can move on to those academic pieces. You know, I think that's really ultimately what you can do in reaching out to others to get help and get support, those people that are in your building. But ultimately, again, it goes just back to that, you know, building those relationships, recognizing when something seems off with a student, and getting them the support. And then those universal things that I mentioned, you know, the blindly calling on and just making students feel more comfortable kind of in the classroom, I think is going to be, you know, really helpful. So,
yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. That is absolutely great stuff. Any other closing thoughts before we take off, Jeff or Jill?
I don't think so. Thank you for having me.
No, Jill, this was outstanding. Yeah, good stuff. All good information. Again, I wish I would have listened to this episode, you know, I don't know, 3-4 years ago in my, in my teaching career. So any teachers out there listening to this, Jill offers up some great advice. And I know I've talked with her numerous times about different things and ways to handle different students in my classroom. And everything she has mentioned to me numerous times in conversations in her office or over the phone. So Jill, appreciate all the insight you offer.
Thank you guys so much for having me and for, you know, bringing this topic into your podcast.
Yeah, let's hope it continues to get the attention that it deserves, because, you know, there are so many issues out there involving that mental health issues and the well-being of students that I love that it's getting more attention. I think the big difference is people are talking about it now. Don't make it a taboo subject. Get out there, talk about it with your students, ask them how they're doing. And just know that treat them like an individual, not like, they're a unique person. They're a unique individual. And that will wrap it up for this episode. Please do us a favor and like, subscribe on iTunes or on Spotify, and join us next week. We are going to be talking about a hotly debated topic in classrooms today, and that's going to be cell phones in school. We're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. I would love to hear from you guys as to what is your policy or what policy do you want. If you have any thoughts on cell phones in school, please reach out to us. You can reach out to us directly in the Spotify app. You can find us at Beyond Standards Teaching with an underscore between each word. We're on Facebook at that address as well. So please reach out and let us know what your thoughts are on that topic. This is Joe and Jeff signing off, reminding you to keep going above and beyond those standards, because you may not make a lot of money, but you do make a difference.